Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
What's up, D3 Nation? We are back. We are ready for another fantastic D3 podcast. I am your host, Dan Kaplan, and with me, as always, is the big dog after a huge weekend. Big dog, how we doing, buddy?
Best weekend of the year, Dan. Happy to be back with you so we can actually talk about it, recap it a little bit, process it, because it felt like it flies by, you know? First minute you're at IHOP, the next it's Saturday night, 11 o'clock, and you're leaving Mustang Stadium. So, awesome experience. Love doing it with you. Can't wait to recap it.
Great summary. It really does fly by. Like everybody says, 10 games, like gosh, or five in a day. Like that's such a long day. Like it is a long day. Like numbers wise, sure. I'll admit it. It's a long day by the eye, but it never feels that way. It never feels that way. It flies by from start to finish. You're just always busy. You're busy from the first second that you get there to the second you leave, between, you know, jumping down to the field, heading to the press box, using, you know, all of the different like aspects of the facility that they have available for us.
On the club section, like we did,
talking to coaches, talking to some players, talking to some friends that we know that are coming by, talking to parents that we didn't expect to talk to or didn't know, like all that type of stuff. It's all awesome. It's like the best weekend for exactly that. Like so many different D3 people that we've come to have a relationship with over the years, all conglomerated into one spot, battling it out.
Mm-hmm. Perfect summary there. And it was awesome, Dan. So you want to get into it?
I do. But we also have some other results from around the way. We have a Sunday of action that nobody knows is coming for them to recap, except for you and I, because it's swarm duty.
Of course.
And we have a lot of other good stuff here in this episode. So let's officially get on to it. All right. Swarm update. Sunday was a big day. Friday and Saturday were loaded. And then you had to get yourself right back up, get on the road, and head to what, Jersey?
Absolutely loaded. Left Mustang Stadium about 10:45, 11 o'clock on Saturday night. Got home, got in bed.
Post-Mustang victory, so there was all the extra like juice of the upset going too.
Exactly. Talked to Justin after the game a little bit. Talked to Coach Canopy and lit up about the win. So I got home still all giddy. Got in bed for about 4.5 hours, up at 5, straight to Philly for the Swarm debut, where we had the doubleheader. And it was electric, man. Quality of lacrosse between Mustang Stadium and Philly, it was, you know, little disparate. There was no, you know, skip throughs or behind the back Thurston finishes, anything like that. But we played some incredible lacrosse. Won our first game 8-3. Boys dominated. They felt hot, felt good. Then we saw probably the best team we're going to face in that
league. Got a little excited after that first game.
Little excited. And, dude, I'm not kidding you. When their goalie on the other team, he was at least a sophomore in high school. He was 6 foot tall, had the sweatpants, the whole stance. And my guys were looking at him. I was like, dude, I never looked this good in my entire life. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Just shoot for the net, I guess. but we did okay. We went down 5-2, 5 minutes left in the game, battled back, made it 5-4, out doubling. They score one with our goalie out, make it 6-4 to end the game. But the boys were in it right until the end. Absolute fight in them. And we went back to the drawing board this week, cooking up some good stuff. I got some new defensive game plans we're putting in, things like that. So Swarm's looking good.
Anything you learned at the Mustang Classic, you're just going to go control C, control V from somebody at Mustang Classic to the Swarm here on Sundays?
So, you know, as much as York didn't perform this weekend, I did love some of their man down sequences that I was watching, especially during the Dickinson game. So I did copy their man down play, trying to initiate it into the swarm defense. We're calling it Amoeba. Got people everywhere flying. Organized chaos, 5-on-6.
All right.
So we'll see if it works. It might utterly fail and blow up in my face, and we'll have to take it out. But until then, we'll see what happens.
Little wrinkle to have in the playbook there for the defensive man down group.
Exactly.
Probably not a bad thing to start to sprinkle in every once in a while.
Right. What's the worst thing though? They're expected to score anyway.
What are you going to get scored on man down?
Oh, man.
It's going to happen from time to time anyways, huh?
Exactly.
All right. Well, that is fantastic news for you. I'm glad that the boys were able to get a win under the belt and then get a little humbled so they're still a little hungry. But in all, it was a good day from top to bottom for the Yell Swarm.
Good victories there. Yep.
All right, so where do we go from here? We know we need to get into some review. We have games that we need to hit. We should definitely start with the games that we called, which, by the way, electric.
Electric stuff.
I've got an itch that I can't scratch. I need to find more broadcast opportunities so that I can itch that that burn, you know?
I feel like now that you're in IL preps,
you have one on Sunday, actually. Fun fact.
You're the perfect guy for IL preps, you know, popping in a booth for a big high school game from time to
time. Big high school game, Spalding. Yep. Spalding on Sunday. Be there or be square, my friend.
Ooh, actually, I won't be there. I will be at my computer listening to you.
Perfect. Even better.
Yep.
But let's stick to the D3 here, my friend. Yep. Actually, fun fact, there is a really good IL preps podcast coming out today. So if you just, you know, you can't get enough of my voice and you are here for D3 but you fell in love with the content here, feel free to just bump on over to IL Preps Pod, give that a listen. There's a little bit of D3 love mixed in there, especially for the jumbos. There's some jumbo love on the IL Preps Pod this week, so maybe give it a listen.
Like that. Yeah. So, Dan,
so where we start,
hit the Mustang Classic.
More befores. Keeping the people on the edge of the sheet.
Do you want to hit any other games that happened this weekend? Because I feel like once we get going with this Mustang Classic,
we're
going
to forget. You're right. We're going to forget. All right. So let's start. Two results I didn't see coming. Muhlenberg, 12. Cortland, 10. Would have had that opposite. Shout out to the Mules, your boys, getting a good one there over the Red Dragons of Cortland.
Love that.
Sinus, 7. St. John Fisher, 5. Another one I would have had in the opposite result. Also, 7-5. 12 combined goals in that game feels very odd. I haven't had the chance to go back and digest any of these outside results yet. So, don't really know exactly what led to those two, but definitely would have guessed going into it that if we did picks on those games, I would have got them wrong.
Yeah. I would have also been in the other direction there for sure. Head scratchers. I would love to see if there was a plethora of saves in that Ursinus St. John Fisher game, because that would be pretty sweet. But admittedly as well, I just soaked up the Mustang Classic this weekend. Didn't catch too much outside stuff.
And then one I know you at least checked out some box scores and were looking at and scrolling and perusing. They stroke your ego every once in a while, and we all know that that's a quick way to the big dog's heart. Grove City, 16. Kenyon, 9. This was – actually, I don't even know if that's the right score. Grove City crushed Kenyon.
Okay. And that's shocking because Kenyon's been on a roll this year. Maybe it was like the spring break, you know, the spring fling sort of feel where they were on spring break.
Well, they went on spring break the week before.
Oh, you meant from Grove City. That's when they were playing the good lacrosse. Yep. So now Grove City on spring break, Kenyon back, you know, they're like, all right, oh, I got to go back to class, do all this, blah, blah, blah. Or Grove City's like, let's just play some lacrosse, boys, out there having fun.
This feels like a lot of assumptions from you.
100% assumptions. Have no factual evidence to back anything that I just said up.
Gosh, I didn't give him enough credit. It was 16-7. 16-7. Yeah, I wouldn't have seen it being this big of a beatdown. Grove City winning, sure. I think these are two teams that are close enough in the rankings that like either team could have came up with a win in it. But it going to the margin that it did, again, did not see that coming.
Nope, not at all. Not at all.
So Grove City, in that matchup, you had Matt Blythe lead it with 6 points. Kobe Bui followed with 5. Luke Jane with 4 points. Those guys had 5, 4, and 3 goals. So combined for 12 of the 16. Those three were just, you know, really, really lethal for that offense. I haven't gone through and really watched it a whole ton, but just diving through some of the highlights and scrolling through it really quickly, on top of checking out some of the box score, that was pretty obvious that those guys were just, you know, playing on another level.
Yep, and this weekend sure is to be a lot of fun. You know, I won't get into it too much, but York, Grove City, they've already said that they've tweeted at me. They've said, you know, it's going to be a split decision for me. I'm
here. You have it. I hear you have a split Brody Coyle style AJ Hawk,
yeah,
Ohio State Notre Dame split, yeah, jersey coming.
It's half Will Harnick and then half Matt Blythe. Yeah.
Oh, so that's your guy, huh?
Height on the back.
Nice. All right. Well, I love all that. I love you, but let's keep it moving. Wait, we'll save it for preview. We'll talk a little bit more about that one in preview.
Yep.
Two results that I would have gotten correct in picks: Wesleyan 13, Williams 10, Gettysburg 13, Denison 7. I don't know that there's too much shock here. Again, Gettysburg would have been the favorite. Denison, we have like right on the border of the top 20. They're challenging themselves, which you want to reward, but just haven't come up with, you know, the wins. The fact of the matter is that they're continuing to set themselves up to be in a really good spot for NCAC play and to come away with an at-large bid throughout the season. So their ranking within the top 20 and to a degree doesn't really matter. It's all about securing their at-large. But I have them right on the outside of it, and Gettysburg pretty solidly within the top 15, no doubt. Top 12, sure. Top 10. You can start to argue it if you'd like, you know, in that or around that range. So that type of a victory, you know, checks out. Wesleyan and Williams, a little tighter. Both going into the weekend were more in the like 15 to 20 range.
Plus, so I think coming, the first game Wesleyan hasn't scored 20 goals. So
it's also the first challenge that they've really had.
True.
But obviously, you know, still get the job done and come up with a victory and are continuing to move in the rankings. So, you know, good things there from the Cardinals. Those two, Wesleyan and Williams and Gettysburg and Denison, I have had a chance to dive into a little bit more and, you know, feel, I mean, relatively validated on, you know, where everything is between the results and how it kind of all played out. Yep. Shout out Jack Raba.
Ooh, ooh.
A lot of points in that one.
A lot of points.
A lot of assists. Assists are cool. I like assists.
Assists are cool. Yeah.
I like assists.
All right. Is it time?
Yeah. You ready to get to it? I know you are.
I'm excited.
Funny stories from.
Yeah.
From.
This is going to be great. Let's go.
All right. Start us off. Let's do the game that you called. You kicked your career in the booth off.
I sure did.
With an electric game, a wild matchup. You took over right after I was in there for CNU Dickinson. You did RIT WNL. We're starting with you. Then we'll come back to CNU Dickinson. Your game was a little bit better. Neither was necessarily the game of the day for sure. But this is where we'll start because we were on these calls. So RIT 15, WNL 9. What do you recall being kind of the biggest factors of that one?
Yeah, so going into it, I was saying on the broadcast, we got to watch Tyler Spano up against this RIT faceoff unit, because RIT goes a little bit by committee, although I believe it was Trussex on the face for RIT.
Alan French, 44.
Alan French. That's yes,
your guy.
Ended up going out for RIT. And RIT's kind of made most of their faceoffs a lot of a scrap this year. They were around 53-58% coming in to the tournament. So I was expecting Tyler Spano to kind not dominate, but definitely make his presence feel imposed a little bit on that unit and get more possessions for WNL. And that was not the case at all. It was made out to look a little bit like a dummy. Which, come on, Tyler. I mean, first broadcast, got to help a brother out a little bit, but. That's fine, whatever. Whatever. RIT's faceoff unit ended up dominating WNL. Mike Grace on the wing absolutely crushed it. I mean, that guy's just a vacuum when it comes to ground balls. So that unit there did a great job, shut down Tyler Spano, and just got them possession after possession, which, you know, RIT, they make the most of their possessions. They can shoot it. They shoot it well. They have some great shooters on that end. And Decane, a freshman, you know, he was up to the challenge. He made some good saves, but you're starting a freshman in the net against one of the best shooting teams in all of D3, it's going to be a tough day.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of continue on those points, Jake Erickson led the day for the Tigers in points with 5 on 2 goals and 3 assists. Caden Brunson with 4 points on 2 goals and 2 assists. Luke Pilcher also had 4 points with a hat trick and an assist. And then Clifford Gaston had 3 points on a goal and 2 assists. He got hot the next night to kind of take over in that RIT Tufts game. But certainly some impressive performances there from the Tigers offense against WNL, who we think has a pretty good defense. And, you know, obviously it didn't give RIT too many troubles, right?
Yep, and another thing I want to mention before we keep moving here is Zaborowski, the Z-Man, as Z-Man heard from the call, liked to describe it there. He kind of had a coming out party in that WNL game.
I'd say this weekend. He played great against Tufts as well.
Both games, incredible, yes. But that first game, I mean, he was standing on his head making some really nice saves.
19 saves total.
19 saves, is that what he finished with? I didn't see the final 19. Stat sheet. Dang, yep. It felt like that watching it too. Like every single thing he was just gobbling up. And you know, sophomore in the net, first year starter for the Tigers there. So good stuff to the Z-Man. Let's keep that up.
Boom. Well said. All right, so I'll take over. I'll go CNU 17, Dickinson 9. Honestly, this one isn't like a whole breakdown game, I don't think. CNU was just the better team. Mm-hmm. They really own possession and just like bleed the game out, it feels like, throughout the game. Like it's just like kind of a death by a million cuts type of a situation where you know, the end result you kind of can see coming for a long, long, long time. I thought the biggest like element of the game was, I guess, twofold. One, like Kevin Miller at attack, the Miller brothers, I guess I would say, at attack were just phenomenal.
Which I've been told there's a third one potentially on the way in a couple of years.
That's correct. Define on the way. Like mom's pregnant again or?
No. Like junior in high school or something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Got it. Yep. So there is another Miller brother that is already at Atlee High School and committed to CNU. So where'd you hear that, you know?
Twitter. Someone's mom.
That's correct. Mrs. Posen, who I suspect is full-blown still on the captain's bandwagon despite her son playing at High Point for the Panthers.
100% would agree.
But so with all that said, I thought it was really interesting that Kevin Miller got the start. Brett Jackson obviously has owned that lefty attackman spot. And so on broadcast, like literally I'm speculating, oh, he must be hurt. We aren't going to see him today. He must be hurt. Kevin Miller starting. And then he comes trotting out. He plays on EMO. He gets some reps through the midfield. He's, you know, he gets some runs at attack. He's just been, I mean, reduced isn't the right word, but he's just been reduced to being, you know, in the mix and in the group rather than in the starting left-handed attackman spot. And Kevin Miller's just really good. He's really good. You know, he can do just about everything that you're going to ask of your left-handed attackman. He moves well off ball. He rides hard. The one thing that it does is it means that their attack is just full of, like, under 5'10", under 175-pound kids, which is scary when the team you have to get through over and over and over again is Salisbury and doesn't have a single one of those guys in the lineup. And they're all old and big and strong. So like that is a little bit concerning, but gosh, he's just really good. And they know each other, obviously, like there's chemistry between the best feeder on the team and Drew Miller, his brother. So like there's an element of all of it that like works. But yeah, they're just going to have to continue to like kind of work out the kinks to figure out the best way to be playing their best with their most athletic group at the end of the year.
Yep. Yep. Very well said.
Thank you. I try to do that.
You do that well. I like the word that came out of your mouth, Dan.
You didn't do well. I feel like it's time to just get to the story. It's a day two story, but gosh. All right. We'll wait. We'll wait.
Okay. All right. Day two.
St. Lawrence 9, York 8, overtime game. Yes. Initial takeaways. Go. Yes. Game one, day one, 11 a.m. You know, there's an element of we want to try and keep things on time. And that immediately is kind of out the door because we go to overtime. Fortunately, it wasn't a super high scoring game. So you aren't like constantly having to stop the clock, go face. And, you know, so it's actually, yep. And there were no injuries, where injuries and high scoring is actually worse than overtime. But the atmosphere, the intensity, the like precedent that game one set of the Mustang Classic is all, you know, an element that can't be understated.
Yep. Could not agree more. And this was a thriller. Massive takeaway for me. I mean, Judge Murphy, absolute dog. Dog. He's an animal. That guy's not afraid to go at the cage. He's got a massive shot. He can get to any point in the field that he wants to in order to release that shot. And I think he's better off ball, to be honest with you. I think the way he sees the field and his vision and the way he orchestrates that whole offense and makes it go is something truly incredible and something I didn't really realize until I got to see it down in person for myself. Like he is all that for sure.
And to extend that point, I think the duo of him and Hutchinson is elite. Another one that like you kind of don't get the same appreciation for on stream. But like the way that every time the ball goes into one of their stick, the other one is then moving like perfectly in sequence or like, you know, cutting in with perfect rhythm or finding like a lane for the other one to be a feeder. And they always have a sense for where each other are. And Hutchinson handles everything. So Murphy has no problem just like jamming him or throwing it all away from the defense and just like letting him make a play, which is exactly what happens in that overtime sequence where it's not a great feed. It's not right on the ear. It's not right on the money, but it's in a perfect spot where he knows Hutchinson's going to handle it, catch it and put it away from the defense. You know, like that's the type of trust and chemistry that, I mean, frankly, like it just doesn't happen overnight. Like you have to play tons and tons and tons of hours with somebody to kind of develop that type of trust and chemistry and like fluency within the offense and within their game. And it shows in every aspect, whether it's 6-on-6, EMO, in transition, like it doesn't matter. They just always have, you know, good rhythm, good timing. They're organized. They know where those two specifically know where each other's going to be, but the whole team kind of have a sense of what they should be reading, where they should be looking, and the timing going into their cuts. And then defensively, they're stout. I'll let you get to their anchor in there, but they're really good defensively. Trip Clark is an absolute. You've used the word dog already. I'm going to go full on guy tag. Wait, guy or dude? Ooh. Which one? What's better?
Dude's better.
Dude. All right. So he's a dude. He's full on dude.
Yeah.
Maybe he was a guy until York goes into overtime, right? And then he becomes a full on dude when he throws that over the head check in overtime to strip the ball and then picks up the ground ball right along the sideline too, like a just give me that, we're out, we're running, and that's what, you know, creates the sequence to win the game. So hats off to him for that immediate dude tag, after immediate upgrade to dude from guy.
Yep, exactly there. And then yeah, let's talk about the specialist positions all around really, but I'll start in the goal because that was, you know, the most glaring spot for me. And Michael Marinello just absolutely dominated the day. He had 11 saves for 8 goals against, and he just felt like a brick wall. And we'll talk about it more with his game against CNU, but he is the real deal out there. He gets down, makes some great saves. He's definitely a presence in tight too. Like nothing's easy on him. You got to work for every single goal. So He's been crushing it this year. And then specialist-wise, Patty Condon. I mean, 13 for 20 on the faceoff, completely neutralizing Vinny there for York and putting him in a tough spot. So Patty Condon and Michael Marinello, specialist positions for St. Lawrence, off the charts and for sure the reason why they won this game.
Yeah, I think between the two of us, that's a really good summary of that one. Sequentially, we've now hit the first three games. So I guess we'll just hit right on to game four. Tufts, 19. Hamilton, 12. I was on the move for this one. This was the first Mustang Classic matchup that I've missed in 2 years. I do apologize. But I was on the move. I had to get over around the corner to Calvert Hall for Calvert Hall and Lawrenceville. But then I was right back for the end of it. So I guess I didn't miss it completely. And then right on scene for Lynchburg-Stevenson as well. But where do you want to start? Tufts-Hamilton, yeah. Lynchburg-Stevenson.
Let's start with this Tufts-Hamilton game because I caught a little bit of the beginning there, or probably majority of the combined, first half.
We've kind of caught it.
We kind of caught it there. So yeah, let's discuss that one. And
honestly, we probably missed the difference in the game.
Yeah, honestly, we did because when I stopped watching, it was, I think, I don't know, 8-8 maybe? 7-7, 8-8, tied up. And I was like, is Hamilton giving Tufts a run for their money right now? Is this going to happen?
Like, I know it gets to 9-9 in the third, like pretty deep into the third. So this was a game for a while.
100%, yeah. And we'll talk about it on day two, obviously. But Hamilton, they can play. And unfortunately, I don't know this for certain or anything like that, but with such a big game on that Saturday, Tufts maybe could have overlooked Hamilton a little bit coming into this because
sure.
They came out ready to rock and roll, dude. They were ready to punch them in the mouths. They looked like they were playing the runner-up national champions from last year, and Hamilton gave them everything they could.
Yeah, they definitely, I mean, I won't say there has to be some sort of element of that, right? Like, you have the biggest game of the entire year so far looming on Saturday. You have an opponent in the way on Friday, but, you know, like, there's just a little bit of, like, that human nature that starts to sneak in on, okay, well, we have RIT on Saturday. We ended their season the year before. We know they're going to be coming with, like, a vengeance. They're really freaking good. They're talented. They play a unique style. Like, it's a lot to prepare for. We got to be, you know, thinking about that.
Yeah.
We're pretty familiar with these Hamilton guys. You know, we play them all the time. We play them. They're in our conference. They're in our league. You know, we're not so worried about them. We got these Tigers that are coming and we're going to have to deal with. So, yeah, 100%. There's some element of that that I would expect to have had at least a presence in their locker room, whether they invited it or not.
Yep. Had to have been. But then, yeah, it seems like, you know, after that, Tufts kind of got a handle on them in the fourth quarter, handled business, and did what they needed to do to close that game out there.
So when I started checking back in on this, it was 13-9. When I got back to, like, the actual, actually to Mustang Stadium, it was already far gone. But, yeah, it was I mean, Hamilton, there's a lot to like, and we obviously got a lot more of a better picture on them on game two. So we'll just keep it moving and then hit them for the most part in accordance to that Lynchburg game.
Love it.
Lynchburg, speaking of, Lynchburg 15, Stevenson 9. You were at dinner, correct?
A dinner? Dinner? Celebrating the illustrious Ben Jones's 30th birthday.
Ben Jones' special 30th birthday. Big time happy birthday to Mr. Jones. Lynchburg 15, Stevenson 9, and it was 10-2 at half. Lynchburg shooters really, really, I thought, were sharp in that game. You know, nothing blown wide. Felt like everything that they got, like, a really clean look at, they just buried. And it just left no room for... It left room for, you know, error. Not everything had to be perfect because they were making up with anything with, like, really, really strong shooting. That said, they had some pretty clean looks. And, you know, I thought it was one of the better performances from Lynchburg that we've seen this season.
Yep. I didn't catch too much of it, but I would agree. And I definitely don't think we saw that same Stevenson team on Friday night that we did Saturday night because that Stevenson team Saturday night, we'll get into it, was pretty fun to watch.
And one big difference was goalie play. You know, goalie play Friday night, a little bit different than what they got on Saturday night. And obviously, as we see, like that can make a huge difference and totally changes just the way that like your defense plays. It changes their motivation. It changes the way that you can play when you're getting saves, right? You don't feel like you need to take away every shot the offense is getting. You just have to take away the best shots. And so there's obviously like a lot of that that goes into it. But with all that, I think that feels like a really good mark for day one. And let's go ahead and shift into day two. This is where it got even funnier.
This is where things stepped it up a notch.
Everything was pretty good on day one. Like normal, though. A lot of normal things, interactions we expected. Day two had some more unexpected type interactions.
To say the least.
All right. Should we start with games we called again or save those for last?
Let's start with that because I called the first game.
Oh, all right. Perfect.
Yeah.
Take it away.
All right. So I got to call the Dickinson-York game at 11 with the legendary Griffin Bass. Absolutely awesome talent. And so much fun to be in the booth with, by the way.
He's a young buck, huh?
He is. Yeah, young guy. He's younger than us, right? Yep, he is. And he calls a bunch of different games, a bunch of different sports. So
should we get him on?
He'd be a sick grab for the pod. He's on 105.7 The Fan. Occasionally he produces for that show as well. So
that's for Glenn. Glenn works on 105.7. Glenn has a radio show on 105.7.
Yeah, he's Glenn's
producer. Did you
know that? Oh. Yeah, he's Glenn's producer. Yeah, we were chatting about it. Yeah. So Griffin, great dude. But this game was kind of tough to watch. Day two of the Mustang Classic. I mean, always test the depths first off. You know, you got to have a deep bench coming into day two. You're not going to get a break, and it's really going to be a battle of who wants it more. I don't think I saw the final stat sheet again from calling it and whatnot, but I believe York got out ground balled pretty good in this game, if I remember correctly. And that's just a sign that they did not want it as much as Dickinson. And Dickinson had, what, four guys out after we talked about it? Four of their top guys out on offense. So they were really relying on just a few guys to make it happen, and they sure did. York in the goal, a tough outing, you know, for Keller. Ends up getting pulled close soon after halftime for Nash, who does step up and have a decent end of the third and a good fourth, but kind of like Salisbury, too little too late in that aspect.
What's the fix there, buddy boy? What's Dr. Caleb prescribing to the six Spartans?
Yeah, that's a tough one, Dan. You know, I think you got to get back into practice, obviously. We talked about it, getting back into the goal, getting the defense confident and, you know, gaining faith in that. But I think they just got to take a hard look in the mirror and say, is this the year? Like, do we really want it this year? Or is this just going to be a mediocre year where it's a flare out towards the end? Because, I mean, they're going to play in the MAC. They're going to be playing at Stevenson or at York for that bid into the NCAAs at the end of the day. But it really is a look in the mirror kind of moment for them at this point in the season.
And I think one thing that I'll quickly just kind of point at, Jackson Shields has been incredible. He's been awesome.
He's been
a huge bright spot for the Spartans. I mean, just done so much more than I'd like to say I'm pretty familiar with the Spartans, and he's done more than I even realized like he had within his game. This weekend was just another notch in his belt in terms of like becoming one of the premier Spartans to ever lace him up there. And I realize that's a big statement, and I mean it.
Very true. No,
he just does so much for this team that if you were to remove him from it, like, I don't know, things would be tough. And he just, like from like a MVP, like value, he just is on another level. Like, he does more for York than, you know, a lot of individuals are doing for any specific team. He starts to get banged up in this one. Dickinson, you mentioned it. They're banged up on the offensive side of the ball. It's just becomes a bit of like a battle of attrition, and Dickinson wins the heck out of that battle. And you like, we go into this game, we're talking about Skylar Schluter, we're talking about Owen Porter, you know, two guys at attack that have logged a lot of times. We're talking about Matt Thurston. Fortunately, Matt Thurston is one of the guys, one of the two that, you know, isn't super, super banged up. And so Schluter and Porter don't play on day two.
Behind the back goal, too, by the way.
It wasn't behind the back. It was backhand, but I'll let you live.
Whatever you want to call it, yeah.
It was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
The spot that I was for it, like, you were up in the booth calling it. I was sitting on the field hanging with Matt Kinnear. And the angle that we had for it was superb. He's falling to the ground and roofs it, first of all, which is incredible. Second of all, because he's falling to the ground, like, the goalie starts to lower with him and drop with him. And then he just, like, around Brent Blackman, you know, around a big, strong, very solid defender. Right at GLE. You know, it's kind of the only move he has. He's not going to run through him. He's not going to body, like, not going to really even drive up to GLE. All he has to go to in that moment is this, like, diving backhand, and he just sticks it. But the point I'm making was nothing to do with him. All about, you know, Schluter and Porter, who both don't play in that game. James Isaacson goes on crutches at halftime on Friday. So even going into the weekend, you knew your midfield was a little banged up because Ethan Guess has been battling some lower body. And then Isaacson goes down on top of it. Now you're left with one of your top guys on your first midfield. You're left with one of your top attackmen from your first line attack. So you have two of your top six. You get a couple guys in there at attack that are skilled, that, you know, don't try and do too much, don't push the agenda, but do what they're asked and execute. And then more importantly, you have these older midfielders, you know, Sasha Gannon, you have Sam Campbell.
It was a real bright spot for them all weekend.
And just totally steps up, you know, totally rises to the occasion that he's given, and fills that opportunity. And he's big. Same with Campbell. They're both bigger, stronger kids that have been around. You know, they're poised. They've played in Mustang Classic games before. You know, like, they've played in some big games. They've won the Centennial Conference. You know, like, they've been around. They've done that. So they're two guys that just, like, totally step up and own their roles in times where Coach Webster and the Red Devils needed them to do that.
Exactly right. Yep. Yep, so a tough one there for the Spartans as they drop it, but we'll keep it moving as we saw St. Lawrence beat CNU for probably one of the biggest upsets of the weekend, if not the biggest upset of the weekend, if you talk about in terms of upset. What would you say, Dan?
No, the biggest upset was Hamilton beating Lynchburg.
True. All right.
Incorrect. Okay, but I love the way that you go all in on, you know, loving and hyping up the matchup at hand. So what did you see from that St. Lawrence CNU game? We got to catch it firsthand, obviously. This was post, right after you get out of the broadcast. You're all giddy. You're still a little jacked up. And we got to catch this one basically from field level for the bulk of it. I brought the laptop down, just kind of sat on the turf and did a little bit of work from there. And, you know, got to keep that IL scoreboard running and keeping things smooth. So did a little bit of IL scoreboard work from the turf with you. You were trekking back and forth, getting video after video, keeping the IL Instagram story alive. What did you see from this one? Who were some guys that drew the big dog, big eyes?
Well, I used them both up in the first game, so
that's okay. Double them up, brother.
It's going to be a little bit of a repeat, but Michael Marinello obviously had to be a huge stud in this game to keep him in it. I mean, stood on his head for a lot of this game. He kept Andrew Cook, that high-powered CNU offense, at bay for a majority of the game and just really didn't give him any looks. You know, everything they got, everything SLU was kind of given up was perfect for him. He was eating things up, getting it up and out, giving them a lot of offensive chances on the other end. And then it's my man Judge Murphy. He scored the big one near the end, but he also just crushed it the whole game. You know, dominated from start to finish, got the offense moving, and super, super impressive to watch. Just such a fun group. I think they might be one of my favorite teams at this point, early midway through the season, to kind of watch and root for, because they're an absolute blast.
Very well said. And I don't have any rebuttals, but I'm going to take your statement and I'm going to just run with it. I'm going to extend it. I'm going to elaborate on it. And you, if you feel the need, can call me dramatic if you want. I love St. Lawrence.
I do.
There's a lot of Captains fans out here that are mad at me right now. I'm sorry. But even you kind of love St. Lawrence and you know it. Where do you want me to start? I'll start anywhere. Offense, defense, specialties, goalie play. Would you pick?
Work from the back up. Start with the goalie play. Please. All right.
Well, I don't really have too much to add to what you said. I think he's really athletic. I think he embodies this, like, I don't know where he's from. Let's do a quick check. But I'm going to say somewhere central New York. He's from New York.
I got the roster up, so I'll check it here.
Thank you. Quick. He's from New York. I can tell just by the way he sits in his stance in the goal. You know, that like athletic, active kind of like, you know, John Galloway style in the cage where like he doesn't let anything by. He's a big piece of the defense. Like if something goes, it's not for any type of lack of energy. But then at the same time, like he just makes stop after stop after stop. He always just seems to rise to the occasion to me. Obviously the guy before Wilhelm went to Duke and led Duke to a national championship. So like St. Lawrence has a little bit of a line in the goalie position going, I feel like. And, to me, Marinello, like he's just reeks of this like northern goalie that is active and like just really, you know, just kind of that prototype keeper.
Does the Belmont Hill School ring any bells for you?
Mass. So I was close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Central New York, Massachusetts. What's the difference? we've mentioned defensively in front of him. There's some guys that can really play. We already shouted out Trip Clark, right? Earlier in this episode, we talked about him, the play he makes against York specifically. But then besides that, there's like plenty of other guys that just kind of quietly do their job. Alex Bouchard is one that still comes out to me. A lefty. He gives Harnick just, you know, I won't say fits because it's not like he's taking the ball from him, but Will just can't shake free. He's just not able to kind of like go by him, challenge topside, get his hands free and, you know, let anything loose. Bouchard just does a good job of keeping, you know, a stick and gloves and being simple and patient and understanding tendencies and, you know, just executing. And then that exact same thing, I would say, applies the very next day, especially late in the game. It might even have been one of the overtime segments or it's, you know, really late in the fourth, a tied game, one goal game. And Brendes is kind of going to work, you know, and Bouchard just does a really good job of being patient, trailing through X, waiting on that rollback. You know, I think if Brendes was able to take a look back at the film and see like how hard he was trailing it, Brendes would have just taken his left hand and kind of gone at it with more speed. Maybe go to a backhand just like you seem to love right now.
Not in the streets. Yep.
But obviously that's a lot easier to tell, you know, in hindsight. But I think Bouchard did a really good job of, you know, like I said, executing his job, keeping a stick in gloves and making it tough on his matchups, specifically Will Harnick against York, and then late in the game against Brendes in a, you know, really tight scenario where two situations where he definitely stuck out to me. offensively, we've mentioned that duo. I think they're the guys that kind of stir the drink. But then they had midfielders that really kind of have some pop to them, you know, and some shift. And so I was just really impressed all around with, like, the way that they play together. You know, you mentioned short stick. You mentioned specialties. Like, they definitely brought it. I don't know how great he is. I do know that he works really hard, played really hard. That's Lucas Podvi, who was the short stick D-mid for St. Lawrence, that to me, like, he just seems like he would have rather died in Owings Mills than left there to 0-2.
Yep, 100%. Left it all out on the field.
So yeah, I love St. Lawrence. I'm sorry, captains, that it comes at the expense of them beating you, because, you know, I've said some good things about you guys over the years too. So don't take it too close to heart.
But if I do want to point out something for the captain, it's old Declan McCulloch got in the game there in the fourth quarter.
Made some huge
saves.
You want to talk about it? Hmm?
Yeah, I came in. I was like, damn, I was super surprised to see a goalie switch.
What's
first off.
What's going on here?
Hanway, but talking to coach after the game, he said Hanway battling an ankle a little bit. Fourth quarter coming in tight. They went to their freshman goalie, Declan. I was like, whoa, all right, this is pretty exciting. Comes in, makes what, two or three huge saves, keeps the captains in the tight one, gets
scale
the ball
of
the field.
Nah, maybe scale isn't the best way. How quickly, upon laying eyes to him, to saying, ooh, me likes, did it take?
It before he got into the crease. He was walking in and I was eyes glued.
It steps onto the field and you're perked up.
Yes, I'm immediately, who's this kid? I need to know more about him.
I could smell it.
Yep.
There's a disturbance in the force.
Yes.
I can feel it. There's a chunky goalie getting in the cage somewhere.
somewhere. Oh, he was awesome, too. I absolutely love Declan. Shout out. Hope he has a super successful career.
And he likely will. He was awesome in high school. He's a guy that when he committed to CNU, every once in a while, there's those guys that, like, you know, I won't claim to know every single Division III commit the way that I wish I would or could. But every once in a while you see one that lands out of Division III and I'm like, oh, that's a spicy one there. Yeah. And, Declan McCullough, definitely, I guess we're calling them spicy ones now. Definitely spicy. A spicy one.
Spicy one. For sure.
All right. I feel like that's pretty good on St. Lawrence. The post game after they score and we get into the celebration onto the field, that was electric. It was the closest I felt to, you know, being alive since playing and scoring those types of goals. You know, or not scoring them myself, but
you scored
someone on the team scoring those types of goals.
You scored a few of them.
For sure. Totally. Yeah. Overtime game winners in the Mustang Classic. I got a few of those under my belt for sure. all right. That's St. Lawrence, though. I love them. They're awesome. They play hard. They're really well organized. They are number 4 in the country right now after all those wins. Boom. St. Lawrence, the Saints, done. Moving on. Hamilton, 16. Lynchburg, 15.
This was probably the biggest upset of the weekend. You're right.
It definitely was. Tell me more about this one, Colin, go.
Yes. This one, I mean, it's tough. You know, we got to talk to Hadley before the game. I got pretty giddy meeting your heroes. It's always fun. Awesome kid, by the way. But yeah, this was a tough one for the old Hornets coming out. Hamilton riding high off that tough game the night before. And I think they it really just felt like they rode that same momentum into this game. They were buzzing the entire time. I was just kind of waiting for Lynchburg to take hold and you know, kind of step on their throats like they kind of normally, or how I would expect, but just kind of never happened. Hamilton stayed in it the whole time, was pretty dominant, and, you know, really made some great plays. So shout out there. I think Hamilton's a really fun upcoming team that we're going to have to keep our eyes on.
So they were tough when it came time to rankings. I didn't necessarily know exactly what to do with them because obviously that Lynchburg win is huge. Unfortunately, on their resume, they have a 7-goal loss to Tufts, which we did see the day before to know that it was 9-9 in the middle of the third. So a 7-goal loss doesn't necessarily do that game justice. But, you know, your reality is what's that saying? Your impression is your reality.
I don't know if I'm familiar with that one, but it sounds right.
All right. Yeah. And then they lost by 12 to Amherst. They scored 5 goals, right? So that was like quite the different display of what we saw at the Mustang Classic. And it's not like, you know, it was a whole ton of time in between. 6 days, you know, about like a week. So, yeah, I don't know exactly what to make of all that. You've made the point of like continue to watch. They are on the radar. They're on the radar. If we were to do a top 30 this week, which maybe we will, I guess there's still time. Maybe, probably won't.
Never say never. Yeah.
Never say never. I don't know that it'll happen this week, but it is one of those. We will get more top 30 rankings in before the end of the season for sure. Make sure we get some of those teams that, you know, perennially fall kind of in the 20 to 40 range love that otherwise don't get it. But Hamilton, I think right now is in that like 20 to 25 and just needs to continue to kind of add some consistency to results like, you know, that Lynchburg one. And, fortunately they have a couple tests to go ahead and do so coming up with, MIT and Bowdoin on the other side of Colby. So 3 games, obviously Colby not necessarily going to move the needle as much as, you know, Bowdoin or Middlebury, who are kind of looming in the NESCAC forum, but two definitely going to be keeping an eye on Hamilton. In terms of like how this one played out, you mentioned it a little bit. I thought that it was, you know, just really, really tight all the way throughout for the most part. I've a run there in the beginning to start the game from Lynchburg where they go up 4-1 and you kind of think like, all right, this is not so far off from what we expected. Maybe based off the fact that Hamilton and Tufts were 9-9, you'd expect it to be a little bit closer right off the bat. But then after that 4-1 start, like it just kind of evens out, you know, and honestly, Hamilton starts to own it from there. They go on a run to ultimately take the lead and they have a 14 to 12 lead, which is kind of the biggest that, you know, 2 goals is the biggest that it gets through the second half.
And Ben Kepler, by the way, real quick to interject, he was an absolute stud after that 4-1 trail. Yeah. He just found a different gear and he was unstoppable towards the end there.
Absolutely. And he was huge. I thought that the face-off guy for Hamilton, he was huge. He's able to come up with a couple of massive plays. He goes 8 of 13 and they use 3 guys really. Mm-hmm. But Sean Giebauer goes 8 of 13, has 4 ground balls and 2 goals. On top of that, you had Michael Scolari go 6 of 10, and you had Reese Hickey go 7 of 11. So you have 3 guys that are always going, which kind of keeps everybody nice and fresh. But obviously those 2 goals from Giebauer on top of his 8 faceoff wins was a huge bump in a game that comes out to a 1-goal victory.
Yeah.
And post-game of this one, we had 2 pod firsts. The first one I thought was going to be the most electric piece of it, and that one happened to me. That was after the game I got to this was pretty cool. I heard on the broadcast via Griffin, our guy, that it was Coach Barnard's 100th win. I got to deliver that news, something that he didn't know. So that was quite the interesting turn of events, which I thought was really cool that he just had no idea that it was even his 100th win. And then I told him, and he was like, oh, huh, That's cool. I like that. You know, like yeah, it was yeah. just kind of all about all in stride. You know, all about the guys and the fact that they had made such a you know, strong performance that day, and he just wanted to get to his interview so he could get back to his team. Something that I love and you know, admire. But then post his interview is where things get a little interesting.
A lot of fun. Yep.
Do you want to tell it, or you want me to give this through my eyes?
I give it through your eyes, and then I'll add.
And then you can give. Out. All right.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
So, you know, Stevenson really goes to some serious lengths for everything with the Mustang Classic. It's incredible. You know, like the show they put on. It's just, it's unbelievable. One of those things that they do is post-game coach interviews for the losing team and the winning team. Winning team usually coaches in a little bit of a better mood, so they have him go first. He goes, he gets up there, does his interview. Losing team usually not in as good of a mood, so you give him a little extra time. He's going to talk to his team first, gather his thoughts, be prepared for these interview questions. I guess somewhere along the lines, there was a little miscommunication on how long you know, we're waiting for losing coaches. Lo and behold, Big Dog, no doubt in his mind that he is hanging out. He's waiting. He is staying. If there's one thing that's going to happen on this day, it's him hearing what Coach Kudelka has to say in the post game, slash him being there to give Coach Kudelka a strong, firm handshake and say, sorry about the result. Something
exactly right, Dan.
You didn't do so well to Coach Childs post game after their loss, if I'm not mistaken.
Also very true. Just a little tidbit. If you ever get to meet a losing coach right after they lose, don't ask them how it's going. It's probably not going well. Just a little hint. I'll leave that there.
Whatever his response was, you deserve
100%. I did way worse than whatever it was.
So the story goes, again, just to get back on track here. Now Coach Kudelka's ready for his interview. And Griffin's there. He's ready to give the interview. He's got the mic, everything set up. All he needs is someone to just make sure that the shot is good. You know, everybody's in the frame. We got what we need. There's a little audio bar so you can see, like, okay, the microphone is registering noise. No big deal. We're good here. Big Dog, you got this?
Yep, they looked around. No one in sight. They said, hey, you want to work this?
Naturally, being the resourceful human that you are, also, like, you know, it's time to step up. Coach Kudelka's ready. He needs you. You're there. What, are you going to turn down an opportunity? I'm not fit to work this camera.
Sorry, Coach. I don't know how to operate this equipment that's been sitting here.
Which is a really good segue, because it turns out you didn't.
Very much not. No. So I get behind the camera. I lens him up. I'm like, Coach, you need to move a little to your right. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's in the shot. And Griffin's like, yeah, just press the button on top. I press the old button, and I'm like, I see you guys. I think we're good. Yep. So my man Griffin gives one of the best interviews I've ever seen. And by the way, I want everybody to know, what was there? 10 games, so 20 coach interviews. I have 19 coach interviews recorded onto my phone. There's one that's not recorded, and it's Coach Kudelka's. Because I'm behind a camera that's not recording an interview. Making sure they're in frame and making sure Griffin's mic is working and recording to nothing.
You had one job.
One job.
Pick the button.
Yes. Camera operator will not be on
dot.
My resume.
There's always a red dot.
Later, though, I did learn there was no mic, there was no chip in the camera, so not my fault. Could not have recorded because there was no chip.
Oh my goodness, that was electric.
But
I didn't find out any of this because I was on the RIT Tufts call until after that game. And you're like, dude, I got a story for you.
I'm jumping the booth and was like, dude, you need to come out here. I held strong, though. So, Coach Kadelka, I'm sorry that interview is never going to go out to the public.
An official apology from the D3 Lacrosse podcast to both Coach Kadelka and the hard workers of Stevenson who did everything possible to make sure that all someone had to do was click a button.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll just say that I can start making up some rumors about that interview, though. Only me, Griffin, and Coach know what really happened there.
Coach Kadelka was just sounding off on Hamilton, I'm sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, like we said, two just electric post-game interactions. I thought I had a good one, and then you were like, hey, I got to tell you something.
Something has happened.
All right. On to the one of the biggest upsets of the weekend. If not... yeah, we already talked about it. Hamilton was the biggest upset. Second biggest upset, probably, though.
Over the St. Lawrence CNU?
Third biggest upset, probably. Go. No, second.
Ooh.
9-5 is very close, right?
I mean,
If Johns Hopkins lost to Penn State, nobody would think twice.
Well, I mean, if two loses to three, that's a big.
No.
No.
That's a great question. You should go back and listen to the end of the broadcast when Christian says, how big of a deal is this game? And I was like, it's a big deal, but not as seismic as Big Dog is going to make it seem like on Tuesday night's recording of the D3 podcast.
Oh, okay.
It was crazy. I had the intuition. It really, the biggest thing it helps suit is seeding at the end of the year.
True.
Like, that's the biggest thing. But necessarily from, like, it being an upset, like, two All teams right. that were ranked second, two and three, like, you know, it's – Tufts would have been the favorite, sure. And it felt like two teams that, like – I don't know that RIT was playing their best. But then they, like, you know, really rounded out, played 60 strong minutes. But, like, RIT's beaten Tufts – a couple times within the last, like, since I've been in this role with IL. So, like, yeah, I mean, yes, it was an upset, but it wasn't seismic.
Okay. All right.
Fair
enough. But, fair? Valid point. Valid point.
Thank you.
Concede. But, by the way, you didn't, I just need a shout out to the people. Dan did an amazing job on both games this weekend, but this game in particular, a lot of eyes, a lot of people. I think you absolutely crushed it. I had people DMing and texting me just telling me, is this the guy that you work with? Is this the guy you podcast with? Like, holy crap, dude. He's so, so good at this. I was like, it's literally his second time doing it. So, dude, awesome stuff.
Thanks. And make sure you send my thanks to all those people, too.
It's going to take a while, so I'll get on it. But Dan, you were in the booth, got a great eyes on this. Tell me, wrap it up for me. Tell me what you saw. What were the keys here? What break it down. How did it happen?
Wait, we kind of mixed in Stevenson and WNL and RIT and Tufts together there in that. Which game you want me talking about right now?
Oh, I want you talking about RIT Tufts.
Okay. All right. Gosh, what a matchup, you know, just first of all, right off the bat, like 2-3, Mustang Classic, 5:45 game where it was like, you know, Stevenson's always takes the nightcap. It's their thing. It's their party. It's their show. Like they should. Plus, it means Coach Canabine is like around to be able to help keep things organized all day and all that type of stuff, which, by the way, like.
He's relentless on those days.
I think when it starts with this game, like. How do you want me to go full summary or just kind of hit some of the standout points?
Hit standout points.
All right. So I think when it comes to this game, there's like a couple of core items. Number one, RIT is the first team Tufts sees that is able to compete with them on 50-50s to a level that changes the way that Tufts can play, right? Tufts needs a certain number of possessions to be able to play the way that they do. They need to be able to have, you know, I don't have a specific number in mind, but they need to be able to get to a certain level of possessions that's going to allow them to be able to do increase the pace, right? Because that's where they get a lot of their stuff is in transition off of other teams in unsettled situations, right? They're trying to clear it off of, you know, a face-off, and now they have two guys in one spot and the third is just slightly out of place. So now when Tufts picks that ground ball up, like, it's just transitioned the other way. And then RIT, I think, is the first team that they've seen that can even like compete with them to narrow that gap on ground balls. So that possession total that they need to really be successful with their style, they just don't get to. RIT goes down in faceoffs off the bat, right? Tufts isn't just winning the faceoffs. They score two goals within the first 30 seconds of the game, right off of two faceoffs, right off the bat.
I looked at you and said, here we go. Yep.
Yeah. Well, you didn't because I was in the booth. But
oh, that's, yeah, no.
You looked at McNair.
Who did I look at? I looked at somebody. Yeah, McNair. Yeah. Yep.
And I looked at Christian Taylor and said, here we go.
Yeah.
And then they really only get another goal, a single goal, over the course of the next, like, I mean, it's extended period of time where they only score one goal. So the idea at that point kind of becomes for RIT, like, we need to make this team score as many 6-on-6 goals as possible. And it's not like that was going to be like a rocket science strategy to come up with heading into the game. But like right off the bat, you just get thrown so into the fire of that because they, you know, score twice off of the faceoff and then struggle to kind of generate some really, really high percentage looks. You mentioned the Z-man. He was great in this one as well. Makes a bunch of saves, but he makes a bunch early that, you know, really helps him to kind of settle in. And Tufts is a team where you know you're going to see a lot of rubber, right? You're going to see a lot of shots. So I thought that was, you know, a really important element of the game as well, that he not just played well, but kind of played well early that helped him kind of settle into a rhythm.
Get into a flow. And that's super important against a team like Tufts as a goalie. You need to get those early saves and get that momentum going in your favor.
No doubt. And I think another element that kind of, you know, we can shift and talk about a little bit, RIT's offense on that side of the ball, they were just so dialed. I think that's the best way to put it. They were dialed in terms of their game plan. They're dialed in terms of their stick work. Like, they're dialed in terms of their shooting accuracy. They just know their roles. Every single player within their offense knows their role to a T. Generally, you can describe it as midfielders do the work so that attackmen can get points. And it kind of shows in this one as well. Like, Dylan Bruno makes a ton of really tough plays in the midfield. John Mosrell is one of the best feeders in the midfield, I think, in the country. I think they do a really good job of putting 12 Brunson in really good positions to be able to be effective and, like, attack the middle of the field. Ian Dinga, another guy, a lefty that, you know, does a really good job kind of in that pair. And either on that high corner or on the wing out of a 1-4 that they kind of run. But all of their guys, they just get exactly what their job is within the offense. And their spacing is really just pristine. You know, like, I think of it as, like, kind of an amoeba that, like, is all in sync, where, like, everybody is all really spread out to start. And then you have a dodge that creates this movement of the defense to have to start to slide, right? Because this long dodge out of the box or from the high corner where they're able to generate space and really attack the middle of the field puts all this pressure on defenses. And now, because they have all that space, they have a full head of steam. Like, they can read the defense, they can see where they're starting to rotate from. And they just do such a good job of, like I said, understanding their job, keeping it simple, executing their reads, and having dialed communication and stick work. And all those things just lead to, you know, really just really dynamic offense on that side of the ball for the Tigers.
Yep. Great points there. It was an electric game, though. Definitely delivered in all facets of the game. And Great stuff. This is why you put on the Mustang Classic. This is why the people come to Owings Mills, Maryland at 5:45 on Saturday afternoon when it's, you know, the day before St. Patrick's Day. This is what it's about, man.
And the crowds were great. Just to extend that point, I think Owings Mills and Stevenson, it's pretty central for so many teams' alumni. Right? Like, you had a big crew of CNU guys there. You had a big crew of Lynchburg guys there both nights. And I think it's just like a spot where a lot of people like live. These teams get to recruit this area pretty well, obviously. And then alumni just kind of either, you know, come back to where they were recruited from, or they settle in this area for a variety of different reasons. But it makes for a great location because, you know, so many families are able to flock to it, but also so many alums are able to kind of plan ahead for the weekend and make sure they're there to support and get two games in, you know, a 48-hour span.
Yep. Yep. Great said. Which takes us to our last game of the evening, which, biggest upset of the day? Was this the biggest upset?
One of. I caught this one. You caught this one. I caught the first half live. You stayed, finished this bad boy out, and then stayed for some post-game interviews because you are the champ that you are. Do you want to start it, or do you want me to, and then you'll pick up the pieces?
Yeah. I'll start it. You pick up the pieces where I leave it off. But this was a you know, start to finish, electric factory. Last game of the Mustang Classic. You always know that Stevenson's going to come out ready to rock and roll. We talked about it earlier, but I feel like Stevenson plans this whole event so that the second night they can catch whoever they're playing off guard. Because this is second year in a row now they've upset a huge team, putting themselves back into the top 20, showing why this thing is so massive. And you know, they dominated kind of from start to finish. They were in it the entire time. I don't recall if WNL ever went ahead in the game, but if they did, it was always very tight. And that really was led by Justin Scor. I've been on that side of things too. You know, getting pulled, it's never a great feeling. And the best part about the Mustang Classic is the very next day you can come in and rebound and prove why you are that guy. And he absolutely did so. Don't know his final stat line to end the game, but it was huge enough to the point where it was the dominated influence of the game. And luckily, second year in a row, I got to catch him in the interview room after the game ended. He is a great guy. I got to chat with him a little bit. Did learn a little tidbit. He was watching the Dark Knight movies because they're on spring break right now. So. Uh-oh. Checking out those Dark Knight movies. He's never seen them, shockingly.
What?
Like, yeah, they've been out for like 15 years. He's like, yeah, I've never seen them. Like, Heath Ledger's most legendary performance ever? Like, what? He's like, yeah, they're pretty good. Like, dude. What? Like, the best movies ever. Not the best, but very up there.
Must see.
Yeah.
You must can't not see exactly. Batman.
But everyone says goalies are a little crazy, so everyone's a little crazy in their own way.
We don't judge those guys.
Exactly. Yep.
He finished with 12 on the day for a specific. But that's a huge 12, and particularly in a night where he's given the opportunity after being pulled, you know, just 24 hours before in a game where, you know, he didn't put his best foot forward. And I think he probably would say that as well.
Agreed. Yeah. Any other analysis from that game there?
Analysis from this game. You asked if WNL ever led. They did. They led 6-5 at some point in the third.
Okay. I knew it was tight.
That 6-5 lead sparked what would ultimately change the game, which was a run from Stevenson where, you know, and it's a pretty quick run. It's not like a, you know, this long drawn out run, but they play some really good defense for the stretch. And it's a 4-goal run where they go from, you know, or 5-goal run, excuse me, where that obviously completely changes the game. It changes the way that they're able to play. And by the time they hit that 10-6 mark, you're just, you know, 11 minutes away from finally landing this big win. It gets a little hairy there with WNL scoring three in a row and two of them coming 19 seconds apart, with one at the 120 mark and another at the 101 mark. And then they're able to hold out and, you know, hold on to that final minute. You were on scene for the final sequence. It ends in a defensive stand on their own end, correct?
Correct. Yep. I live tweeted pretty much the whole fourth quarter.
You sure did.
All those goals. And then it was just a save fest, which, you know, most people end up just tweeting those goals for game updates. I was just tweeting save after save for the updates. Boom, save on this one. Boom, save on that end. Back and forth.
This guy must have played goalie. Quick note, no Joey Allen for WNL. I think he's a big piece of the puzzle for that offense. He is a guy that kind of does all the little things in an offense that you don't notice that he does until he's gone. And I think this is a good example of that. Like, he does things to mesh and does things that are real subtle, and is a piece of the puzzle that allows Burns to be an even more dangerous factor. And so I think that his absence was notable throughout the weekend.
Yep, definitely. So, also, I got a great shot of Elliot Cohen, who we've officially tagged as dog. Dude status.
Dude. Yeah.
Dude.
Dog.
Yeah. Awesome clear on the sideline.
Cody Devon. Dog.
Just, dog. Ran a Stevenson attack maneuver.
And you got a little attention. Would you like to tell the people the attention that you got, or not really?
I mean, you can go to the La Crosse Network, check out the clip. That's all I'm going to say.
Shout out to the big dog, getting content done, racking up likes, drawing in some publicity to himself. All right. I feel like that's a pretty good Mustang Classic review. I'm already excited for next year.
Dude, it can't come soon enough.
All 10 games were electric. We'll be there for every second of all 10 as long as our schedules allow it again next year.
Yep. And I can't
wait on the calls again. Huh? Maybe we'll even convince Glenn to let us ride together for one.
Dude, I think we've proven the point that we can handle a game together.
Who's doing
it? We might get a little off topic from time to time, but we can handle it.
I think I'd have to do play-by-play, which would be a tough prep. Maybe we could have Gary do the prep for us again.
Yeah, Gary, get all the sheets up.
Yeah, Gary, do the prep for us. We just roll in, and I'll take the play-by-play role, but I need him to give me his goods.
Yeah. We could also get Griffin in there, do a little three-man.
Yeah, little Griffin action for sure.
Yeah, I mean, awesome guy. Go check him out on Twitter or anything like that. Follow him. He does some great work.
Griff. All right. Let's do some preview. It's Wednesday morning when the people are listening to this, so we have some good ones today. Obviously, this time of the year, there's no shortage of action on Saturdays. There will be a pick of the litter no matter what Saturday, even if some teams are a little inactive for a bye here and there, whatever. There's always going to be an incredible slate in Division III lacrosse. There's just too many good teams that, you know, need good matchups. So there's always an incredible slate. Let's start with Wednesday. What's drawing your eye?
Yep, I'm really excited to check out this Amherst-Gettysburg game that's going to be played later today when people are listening to this. You know, Gettysburg's been a solid team.
You going
to
go?
Oh, I can't go. Got a big swarm practice and prep for start of second league.
Take the boys up to the Gettysburg.
They were already there this past summer for a big tournament, so they know the
head
route.
Right on back. You can do a little practice in the backfield, and then stick around for the game.
I'm sure now that that we're tight with coach, I'm sure he'd allow that too. That'd be cool.
You guys are basically best friends.
I'll hit him up. Maybe we can schedule something like that. But yeah, this is going to be a great game. Amherst kind of looking for that defining win. That breakout game to get them in the spotlight, and this is their chance to do it. This is a great Gettysburg team we just talked about. You can talk about them being, you know, mid 10 in the rankings. So if Amherst can come out and play a good game, I think they can catch Gettysburg off guard a little bit, and we'll see here.
I'm going to talk about Williams and RPI. I have news for you.
Okay.
Confirmed pronunciation of EPHS
is?
You tell me. Take a guess.
I'm rolling with F. I'm rolling with Fs all the way.
Yeah, no, it's Eves. 100%. 100% confirmed. I've made a Williams friend. He confirmed it. But this game I'm excited for. RPI is, you know, had an incredible season so far. They have come out with some pretty miraculous wins. They've come out with some tight wins. Miraculous, I'm referring to the Middlebury game where they come back from down a good solid handful. They have a 6-1 fourth quarter in their favor to end up winning it. So they've had some highs and lows, right? And no significant lows, but that was trending as it was going to be a low before an ultimate super high. Williams has conquered them the last four times they've played. So this is one where, like, Williams has had their number. Williams needs a win like this. So two things that kind of are definitely working against you if you're an RPI fan that you're a little bit concerned about. But you got to feel good about what your team has done so far this year heading into it, to a degree that this game is going to be, in my eyes, you know, a can't miss game of the week, and definitely a game that on Wednesday we'll be paying attention to, and I'll be sending you updates for.
Love that. Please do. And if I have to highlight one more on Wednesday, it's got to be Stevens going to Wesleyan. Wesleyan, we've talked about electric factory, score a lot of points, but they're going to be put to the test this week. Stevens goalie, Kevin Holtby. I don't know if he's in a relation to Brendan Holtby, the Caps goalie at one point.
You don't know if he's in a relation?
No, with? I don't know if they are related.
Oh.
Yeah, like cousin, nephew.
Got it.
You know, that sort of jazz, whatever.
I thought you meant spouse.
Oh, I mean, that too. I don't know. You never know. Love is love, man. Let it fly. But, you know, Holtby comes in 82 saves on the year. He has a 64% save percentage. And really leads that defense. So he's going to see a tough task with this Wesleyan offense. It's super high powered, loves to score goals. So it's going to be a real clash of the Titans there, I believe.
I can't believe you left me Middlebury Union, but that's one that I definitely will shout out. This is a Wednesday game, 7 o'clock at Sparks. I'm trying to go. I don't know.
Ooh, at Sparks?
Yes. 7 o'clock tomorrow night. I am going to WRA Spalding for sure at 4 o'clock. I don't know for sure if it's in the cards for me to be able to make it over. But we will definitely, definitely find out.
Love it.
I'm going to try. And as long as I can make it, I will make it. So 7 o'clock at Sparks for Union Middlebury, in a game that I'm definitely really excited for. Union, I won't say they need a statement win because they've been winning, but I haven't been super convinced of what I've seen from them so far this year. Middlebury obviously needs a statement win, right? Like,
yep.
I don't think we need to go into that one too much. So that's a matchup that I'm really excited for. And U.S. Lacrosse doesn't normally have streams, so I don't know that if we don't go that we'll get to see it.
Yeah, you might be the only source here.
Yeah. So we will find out exactly how that all plays out. This is the perks of, you know, tuning in on Wednesday morning when on Tuesday night at 10:54 p.m. I still have no idea what tomorrow has in store for me because life is busy, brothers and
there
sisters.
We go. Just take it one wave at a time, man.
That's correct. But I hope to be able to get there. I hope. All right, Saturday, more action. I want to get right into the game that I know is going to have your eye all week. That
yep.
Mixed jersey coming in. You got half Matty Blythe, half Will Harnick, York versus Grove City. Your heart is torn. Your brain is torn. I think I know in the end, where if things were to get real tight, you know, it's 9-9, 30 seconds left on the clock, there's a ground ball. I pause time and I'm like, where's the big dog? I find him. I think you'd be leaning towards hoping the Spartans pick up that ground ball. As much as your little Twitter fingers want to say you like the Grove, you'd be ready for the Spartans to pick up that ground ball, mister.
It's fun to go back and forth on Twitter, but I think you're absolutely right, Dan. If push came to shove there at the end of the day, the Spartans would be the ones who would pick up that ground ball for me.
I had to get it out of you. I just had to.
It had to be done. But Grove City, my second love, my home away from home.
That you've never been to.
That I've never been to.
All right, so Grove City at York, that'll be a good one, a really fun one to watch. I'm sure of it. Tufts and Stevens, that'll be interesting. Tufts coming off of, you know, the loss to RIT. Now they see the Ducks. This will be interesting. I got the Jumbos in that one. But Stevens, you mentioned Holtby. You mentioned, you know, just having a really stout presence in the cage there for the Ducks. So another guy that we can bank on seeing plenty of rubber here this weekend. And who knows, maybe Stevens is able to take a page from the Tigers' books and, you know, come up with something that'll be really challenging for the Jumbos and escape with the win.
Yep. Yep. Very well said. Another one that's going to have my eye on Saturday has got to be those Stevenson at Salisbury.
Yes.
Stevenson coming off the huge win. And honestly, Dan, you might call me a little crazy here, but if there's anybody that matches up kind of well with Salisbury, I think it's Stevenson.
You're crazy. Yep.
You know, that's fair. Fair. But I think they match up pretty well. If Justin plays the way he did, you know, that last day of the Mustang Classic in this game, they're always going to have a chance. They're nice and big on defense. They're physically imposing. And you know, that offense can be electric when all their guys are on. So if they're having an all day offensively, I expect this to be a shootout.
All right. I like your take. I'll let you live with it and see how the results back that or refute that take. RIT and RPI, another one that's going to be really interesting. We get a little bit of Liberty League action here with those two guys taking each other on. That game we'll know a little bit more about on the other side of today's Williams and RPI game. Lynchburg at CNU, two teams that, you know, obviously after last weekend, they're going to be entering that one off of losses. So, I don't know for sure that they don't have a midweek. If they do, no disrespect intended, my bad. But I think they're going to be entering that bad boy off of losses following the Mustang Classic, seeing each other in a game that they're really familiar with. Fun fact, if this goes to overtime, take all your money and bet it on Alex Brendas to win it. He actually has a hat trick of overtime game winners against Lynchburg alone in his career.
That's impressive.
Thank you. Wait, for him or for me to know it?
Both.
Okay. More for him, I guess, right?
I would say for you. That's a lot to store in your memory bank there.
There's a lot of lax in this brain. A lot of lax in here. But yes, that is a good fun fact all around. So yeah, that bad boy goes to overtime, take all your money, bet it on Brenda's to win it. You mentioned Stevenson, Salisbury, Babson, MIT, always a classic, according to the outline. Well said, my friend. It is.
I feel it is.
Two teams that are very familiar with each other. Last year's battles gave us some really, really good ones. So definitely another one to be excited about. And then we have our NCAC battle in Kenyon and Denison, which normally serves as a precursor for how the NCAC playoffs will unfold and will usually have a pretty significant impact on that given the seeding. All right. So I think that kind of runs through the slate. We have Wednesday games. We have Saturday games. Let's pick bets of the week. Let's do a big dog, big take, and then let's wrap this shindig up.
All righty. Sounds good. Bet of the week. Are you setting the line or am I?
Yes.
Yes. Great answer.
I'll do it.
Okay.
Wait, no, I did it last week. Because remember, okay. I said him, and then our friends at Las Vegas Lines was like, I don't know who this guy is, but his lines suck. Here's good lines.
Yep. Yeah. Agreed.
So now it's your turn for that guy to shit on you.
Okay, perfect. I'm ready for it. I'm going to take the... Oh, you know what? I got a little recency bias, so I'm going to take RIT RPI. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Wait. You don't want to do one for Wednesday, too?
Why don't you set the line for Wednesday? I'll set the line for Saturday. And we can both get a little action.
Yeah, let's just do one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I'll do this one. We'll do... You know what? I'm feeling a RIT 3.5.
I like it.
Yeah?
I like it.
You take an RIT?
3.5.
Yep. And I'm going to set the over-under at 25.5.
Well, then we would need a third bet, because then we wouldn't know.
We'll do total saves.
Either way, we would need a third bet, because if we split on the first two, then we don't have a winner. Your solution is not actually a solution.
All right, we'll just keep it at 3.5. You pick.
I will take RIT to win by more than 3.5.
Okay. All right, that's going to be tough, Joe Perry.
It will. It'll be really tough. I think RIT is good.
They
just beat Tufts by 6 or 5 or whatever they did. I think Tufts is better than RPI. Therefore, I will take RIT to beat RPI by more than what they beat. By more than 3.5. But perhaps more than
name,
they beat
though, RPI knows them quite well.
They do. They've beaten them before as well. Fun fact.
Yep.
If you recall another Joe Perry stellar game, I think that was... I want to say he was a freshman in that round. And then at the end of the game, whistle blows, and that's the RPI just basically tackles everybody so that they can't – like games end on flags, right, in our sport.
Yep.
So when it's short time like that, you're afforded those types of luxuries, and RPI is really smart, so they take advantage of everything they can. And that was just one thing about that game between – two things I should say about that game that stick out off memory is Perry's performance and then the way that, it just ends the final 10 seconds of it.
Yep.
All right. Bet of the week is in the books. I got RIT 3.5 over RPI. We got a big dog big take or what?
I think it's a big dog life advice. And my life advice... would be.
Are we encouraging people to start D3 burners?
Yeah,
I love
that would be cool
that.
Too.
I love that.
I loved all the RIT fans this weekend. I said in my Friday broadcast that I thought Tufts would take the cake on Saturday. And,
did I give an offer? Did I give a pick?
I forgot if you did or not. I didn't listen to the extent of your broadcast, so I'm not. I don't know.
Well, no, I didn't. I wouldn't have done it on the broadcast.
I was an idiot and I did it on the broadcast.
Oh,
so they were listening. So when I was standing on the sideline,
I thought you meant on the podcast last week.
No, literally on the broadcast that they were all watching the night before because it was their freaking game. So I'm standing on the sideline for the Tufts RIT game, filming all the stuff, and all I hear is inside lacrosse, like, you suck, like, what the like, oh my god, I have haters.
You're like, guys, I'm not the big dog. They're like, yeah, you ain't hiding.
You got the wrong person here, man. I don't know what you're talking about. So shout out those guys.
I think I'm indebted to RIT because I picked them to win the national championship the year that they won it for the first time. So no one gets mad at me. Fun fact. Picked to get over the hump before they were ever over the hump.
You're like a fortune teller.
I think they just had a really good team that year, and a lot of people were like, hey, RIT is going to get it done this year. This is the year. They're really good. And then it came true.
Ah, there we go. Yep.
Including me.
You know.
For sure.
But the life advice.
Yes.
Is fake it till you make it, man. Fake it until you make it. And you know why?
Are you going to expand or is that it?
You know why? It's because we both had zero experience going into this color broadcasting thing. And I at least had a lot of fun. I don't think I was that good at it, but I had a lot of fun.
I thought you were great.
I did okay. I give a more, you know, general fans type perspective with a little sure. sprinkle of knowledge here
That's
and
there. That's great, though.
Yeah, but like both of us, I think I can speak for you, too. You had so much fun doing it. You were natural in the booth. And, like, I don't even know if you had to fake anything until you made it because you were on point like that. So if you have a dream, if you want to do something, just go out and do it. It's going to happen for you. If you want it enough, it's going to happen.
I think I'll walk it back. I'll hedge your advice a little bit. It's not necessarily fake it till you make it, I don't think. Maybe for you.
Yeah, for me it was. That's how I felt.
But I think, like, if you wait to be prepared for an opportunity to take the opportunity, it's going to pass you by. Sometimes, like, you just kind of have to take it and know that you might not be, you know, the best at it right away, but that's all right. And starting is the bigger piece of the process, right? Like, doing anything for the first time is going to be the biggest piece of the puzzle to get off the ground. And so I think I'll walk yours back and say, maybe not fake it till you make it, but hashtag life advice for the D3ers out there. Don't go spending all your time trying to get prepared for an opportunity. When there's an opportunity that comes knocking, take it and then use that, you know, to be able to launch yourself a little bit. Don't be spending all your time waiting and preparing for an opportunity when you can kind of seize one and let it roll from there.
That's a very well articulated point, Dan. Lovely.
A little life advice to round us out here on the D3 podcast. Maybe all the parents listening, which is really who listens, yeah. I think, to this, are like, hey, this is good, our kids are listening, and then your kids aren't actually listening. Fun fact.
Yeah. No. Just
But maybe there's a couple that are, and so if that helps you, pocket it. Keep it in the life storage advice box. And if you ever need a question along those lines, you just head right to Twitter and you find CAbney02. You hit his DMs and you say, what in the hell are you talking about?
And then please copy that and paste it right into @dkaplan46.
I won't answer you. All right. That was a stellar D3 pod app. Some good laughs, some great memories. Mustang Classic takes no prisoners. It's obviously just an incredible 48 hours, 10 awesome games, ranked opponents just battling it out. Back-to-back format, you get all the chaos. Goalies pulled on one night that make incredible plays the next day. Goalies that make a billion saves one night that you don't see the next day. Just all sorts of storylines and things unfolding that, you know, every single year, the Mustang Classic packs something into it that you didn't expect to see that hadn't happened the year before. Like, all that type of stuff. It's just so much unpredictability that, you know, really just makes everything in Division III lacrosse really fun, but especially in a 48-hour format with 10 incredible games.
Incredible. Very well said, Dan.
All right, let's do this thing. Let's let the people get back to their lives. We appreciate you guys for tuning in. This has been another episode of the D3 Lax podcast. I am your host, Dan Kaplan, and with me for life, for always, my PIC, the big dog, D3's hero.
Love y'all.
Peace.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.